mouth and the meditations of our hearts and the actions of our lives.
Of all the stories of Jesus in the Bible, the Gospel of Mark highlights conflicts between Jesus and the religious authorities of this time the most. Over and over, Jesus goes head to head with the scribes, the Pharisees, and the leaders of the people.
Went home with his mother.
It appears that according to Mark, for gospel people, conflict is inevitable.
I've decided to become a minister when I grow up.
It was around every corner. Today, he is in the unfamiliar territory of Caesarea Philippi, and he wants to know what people are saying about him. Consulting with the disciples gives rise to a conversation about what is at the root of the gospel.
I figure
taken from
it'll
Mark,
be more fun to stand up and yell than to sit down and listen.
27-38. Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi.
When I get to stand
and
up and yell,
the way,
and you get
he
to
asked
sit down
his
and
disciples,
listen.
Who do people say I am? And they answered him,
It would actually
the Baptist,
surprise me, though,
and
if,
others, Elijah,
very many folks
and still
had
others,
the impression that my style
prophets.
Was to stand up and yell.
He asked them, but
maybe
who do you say that I am? And Peter answered him,
but it does
you
continually
are the Messiah. And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him.
And then what people will say
then
about
he began
afterwards.
To teach
what
them that the Son of Man must undergo great sufferings and be rejected
that
by the elders, the
go,
chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again.
But more often than that, I'll go...
He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. For you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human
truth
things."
Truth is,
he called the crowd with his disciples and said to them,
"If
any of you want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up the cross and follow me.
Beyond ourselves.
For those who want to save their life will lose
it, may not have
and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life?
Gets created
indeed,
when they put something out
what can they give in return for their life?
They may or may not have intended.
Those who are ashamed of me and of
what
my words in this adulterous and sinful generation,
what you do
of
with
them,
a coffee cup
the
in
Son of Man will also be ashamed
may end
when
up
he comes in the glory of his Father
meaning something
with the holy
to someone
angels.
Else down the road.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Jesus knew this when he said, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you, but what comes out. Okay? And so he knew that as he traveled the unfamiliar territory of Caesarea Philippi, he knew that what he said and what he did was creating something outside of himself, creating impressions, forming a message. And he wanted to know what that message was that was forming in people's minds and hearts based on what he was saying and doing. Now, if he'd lived today, he would have contacted Ipsos Reid or Gallup or somebody like that, and they'd have done the research. But in his day, he asked his friends. It's about messaging, right? What's the message that gets out there? How is the message being heard by others? I mean, we are in a time of messaging right now, hey? With political leaders and parties and pollsters and strategists that are just trying to get it just right. The world is awash in messaging. Until this week, I didn't even know there was such a person as the Wizard of Oz and that person could be hired to help you message. And is now re-messaging the Conservative Party's campaign. And everybody's doing it, messaging. And it can be tempting to get a little cynical and conclude that the whole messaging task is actually at root and stem a kind of a manipulative thing, trying to get you to believe stuff that may or may not be true. But messaging does actually matter. Not just in politics, but in anything you do beyond yourself. In what we are trying to do here at Northwood, messaging matters. And there are three things, in my view, that matter about it, or three levels upon which it matters. And the first, does the message ring true to the intention of the sender? It's a question of trueness with respect to the intention of the sender. And the second thing is, do the core keepers of the message really get it? Really get what's at the core of it, at the heart of it, understand it in their heart and soul and in their lives? And the third level is the heart of the message getting out, or is what's getting out peripheral stuff? That can happen. Let's just see how Jesus dealt with messaging in our gospel reading. First of all, he's in Caesarea Philippi, which is a major Roman center. There's a huge temple to Caesar, and it's also off the beaten track of Jesus' usual, where he usually circulates. Right, so he's in kind of foreign territory for himself. It's not his usual stomping ground. So he asks, who do people say that I am? It's a messaging question. This is a public relations question, right? I mean, he's not in an election campaign, but he is developing a following, and it does matter what they think they're following. And he doesn't want people to get the wrong idea about him. So he asks the polling question. When you ask 500 people, who do you say that I am? 19 times out of 20, well, they come back. The question matters. The message on the street matters. And so they come back with the message on the street. And the answer is, well, the answer lacks a little clarity. Some say John the Baptist, who had died, had been killed. So maybe the reincarnation of John the Baptist. Some say Elijah, who is an ancient one, maybe come alive again. Maybe one of the other prophets, the old prophets of old. Well, there's clearly a puzzling expectation of magic and rebirth going on there. That could be a problem. So he goes one step deeper. Well, when you're out there, who do you say that I am? Another important question. What is the message that the core keepers of the message are putting out there? And the answer? The Messiah. It's a very potent title. And in this neck of the woods, a title that's wide open for interpretation. What exactly do we expect from a Messiah? And especially when you are in Caesarea Philippi, where the Romans are very strong. The Messiah, the one to overturn things. And his response is, don't be saying that to very many people. Clearly, Jesus has perhaps an even worse messaging problem than Stephen Harper had this week. He doesn't call for some outside help. No, he sits down with his core people in an attempt to get really clear about what the core message is that they're trying to get out. What does the gospel of love actually mean, and what are the consequences if you choose to be a follower? If you stand up for the gospel, what is that going to mean for you? And he says it openly. There will be suffering. There will be death, but God will be faithful. And Peter takes him aside and he goes, stop saying that in public. And he says, get behind me, Satan. You're setting your sights on very human dynamics. Set your sights on things divine. Even if it's true that that message is going to stir things up a little bit. Peter wants to win the game. Peter wants the message to be popular. And Jesus says, none of that. Don't soft pedal the cost of discipleship. Be honest from the beginning. Otherwise, you're setting your sights, you're setting the bar at likability or winnability. But you're losing the heart of the gospel in the process. Be honest, be real, so that people know what they've signed up for. Set the ideals and the consequences clear at the outset. There's no bait and switch going on here. This is honesty in messaging. And then he turns to his disciples and everybody else and lays out the crux of the matter. You can live for a win. You can change your message in the hopes of making the message more likable, but your life and your soul will be traded away in the process. What you need to do is decide. Decide to pour out your life for the sake of the gospel of radical love. It's not about coming to the end of your life having been liked. It's about standing for something in the midst of your life. And this gospel of radical love does claim your life. And you have to be willing to let that happen. You can go ahead and trade it off to win or to survive, but what you will lose in the process is soul. And my goodness, there's nothing more precious than soul. So there's messaging, Jesus style. We're at the beginning of a season here at Northwood. Welcome back, any of you who have been away for the summer or been traveling or whatever, and welcome to anyone who's new among us. As we head into this, the busyness of our active life, fall fair preparations, children's church starting up, all the communication that'll go out, and the choir casts out its first harmonious notes of the year. We welcome newcomers, folks coming from other places. We reform as small group ministries of various kinds. And it's good to ask those three messaging questions as we begin. To do that, and to do that Jesus style. This message of radical love and costly discipleship, the task of giving your life over to the radical ways of Jesus, pouring it out for the sake of love. Are you in? Because that's our holy purpose. Does it ring with authenticity in your heart and mind? That's the first question. The second, are there things about that core purpose, core message that you wonder about, that you question, that you want to hear more about? Are there ways in which we try to live that radical love and that costly discipleship that kind of jangle with who you know yourself to be and who you think God is calling us to be? As keepers of the message, it's really important that we get all those questions answered, that we get really clear, so that as core keepers of the message, there is trueness to what we're offering, what we're putting out from here. It's important that Northwoodians, I just made that up, that Northwoodians own the message. And finally, when people walk through that door, when they hear about Northwood, when they check us out on the internet, find us on Facebook, do they get a snapshot which speaks radical love, costly discipleship, the radical embrace of a loving God? Is that what you see? Because it's about being authentic, having integrity, being true. So I want to conclude with the contemporary casting of the words of a 19th century Scottish minister named Horatius Bonar, one of the Bonar clan, who wrote, "You must be," this is a minister in Scotland in about 1850, "You must be true to yourself if you the truth would teach. Your soul must overflow if you another soul would reach. It needs the overflow of heart to keep the lips full speech. Think truly, and your thoughts shall the world's famine feed. Speak truly, and each word of yours shall be a fruitful seed. Live truly, and your life shall be a great and noble creed." How about that for a goal for the coming season? That our life be a great and noble creed. Amen.